again, since Janmashtami, Krishna Janmashtami is approaching, I thought we should say something in relation to Krishna's appearance, but I want to do that in a slightly roundabout way. Roundabout. Let's see. Let's see what happens. I thought we could start with a verse in chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita, a well-known verse. You all know this verse. Or if you don't, I recommend to learn it. It's verse number 13. It goes like this. Mahatmanas tumang partha. Mahatmanas tumang partha. Daivim prakritim ashrita. Daivim prakritim ashrita. Daivim prakritim ashrita. Bhajantyananya manaso. Bhajantyananya manaso. Gyatva bhutadim avyayam. Gyatva bhutadim avyayam. Do we have our translation system up and running? Ah, there you are. Okay. So, what does this mean? Mahatmana. The great souls. To. But. Mam. Unto me. Partha. O son of Pritha. Who is Pritha? Pritha. Partha is Arjuna, so who is Pritha? Kunti, yes. Daivim, divine. Prakritim, nature. Ashrita. What does ashrita mean? Yes, having taken shelter of. Bhajanti, render service, offer service. Ananya manasa, without deviation of the mind. Gyatva, knowing. Bhuta, of creation. Adim, the origin of Yayam, inexhaustible. How do you say inexhaustible in Slovenian? Nie? Neschope. Ne is chope. Ne. Ne is chirpin. Ne is chirpin. Nace chirpin. Nace chirpin. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada. Translation. O son of Pritha, those who are not deluded, means bewildered, confused, the great souls are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and Nace Chirpin. purport. Originalni. Izvoren. Original. Izvoren I Nesterpen. Purport. In this verse, the description of the Mahatma is clearly given. The first sign of the Mahatma is that he is already situated. I always want to sort of mentally add in, Prabhupada always uses the sort of general prefix, male prefix, he. But nowadays that's very uncool. You're supposed to say he or she, right? So that, let's say that's implied here. The first sign of the Mahatma is that he is already situated in the divine nature. He is not under the control of material nature. And how is that affected? That is explained in the seventh chapter. One who surrenders unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, at once becomes freed from the control of material nature. That is the qualification. One can become free from the control of material nature as soon as one surrenders his soul to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the preliminary formula. Being marginal potency, as soon as a living entity is freed from the control of material nature, he is put under the guidance of the spiritual nature. Here comes the water. Thank you. He is put under the guidance of the spiritual nature. The guidance of the spiritual nature is called Daivi Prakriti, divine nature. So, when one is promoted, elevated in that way, by surrendering to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one attains to the stage of great soul, Mahatma. The Mahatma does not divert his attention to anything outside of Krishna because he knows perfectly well that Krishna is the original Supreme Person, the cause of all causes. There is no doubt about it. Such a Mahatma or great soul develops through association with other Mahatmas, pure devotees. Pure devotees are not even attracted by Krishna's other features, such as the four-armed Mahavishnu. They are simply attracted by the two-armed form of Krishna. They are not attracted to other features of Krishna, nor are they concerned with any form of a demigod or of a human being. They meditate only upon Krishna in Krishna consciousness. They are always engaged in the unswerving, that means not deviating, service of the Lord in Krishna consciousness. And so ends Srila Prabhupada's purport. Mahatmanas tumang parta daivim prakritim ashritaha bhajantya nanya manaso yadva bhutadim avyayam osanaprita. Those who are not deluded, the great souls are under the protection of the divine nature. They are fully engaged in devotional service because they know me as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, original and inexhaustible. Right. Our first word in this verse is Mahatma. And this word became famous back in the early 20th century. Became a kind of household word in the early 20th century with the designation of one Indian politician named Mohandas Karamchand Gandhi as Mahatma. Actually, this designation Mahatma was given by Rabindranath Tagore. Rabindranath Tagore was a poet. He was also an artist. He was also a playwright. He was many things in Bengal, who received the Nobel Prize for Literature in 1913. It was a big thing because it was, I think, the first time that an Asian received this Nobel Prize. Anyway, Mahatma Gandhi, he became known. And so everyone heard Mahatma. It became a kind of, we say in English, household word in the, around the mid-20th century. I don't know about here in Slovenia. Also. So we didn't really have much idea what Mahatma meant, and I think it's therefore interesting to go back to the source, where this idea of Mahatma comes from. Most probably, Rabindranath Tagore got the idea from Bhagavad Gita. So here we're getting a kind of definition. Mahatma is one who is ashrita, is sheltered, literally, in daivim prakritim. Now this chapter has been referring to prakriti more than once. Prakriti, of course, means nature, and it means material nature in a sort of primordial sense, but it has various meanings. And Krishna's explaining how he's the source of and the cause and the controller of this nature, of all it is, basically everything that we have awareness of, starting with our bodies, everything around us, we may refer to in that way as nature. But then here he's introducing, he's giving a twist to the idea of nature. He's saying there's also transcendental or divine nature. And that's something that is interesting for us. It's very interesting. And what I wanted to suggest is one way of thinking about divine nature is to think about Krishna's dhamma, the word dhamma, not dharma, but dhamma, is very significant. Why? Because whenever there is Krishna, wherever there is Krishna, there's also his dhamma. Of course, if we think about Krishna appearing, he's going to appear in a couple of days. So where is he going to appear? In his Dhamma, yes. And what's another name of his Dhamma? Vrindavana Dhamma Ki Jai. Now, I have a little quiz for you. Quiz time. Where does Krishna go when he wants to eat? Here's a fat, quick, yes. You know all the answers, don't you, Manitana? Oh, it's Gaurachandranan. Okay. Krishna goes to Jagannath Puri when he wants to eat. Why does he go there? To eat? Yeah, because it's there, it's constantly eating. His program, what does he do? He eats. And after he's finished eating, what does he do? He eats. Yes. 56 Chappanna Bhoga. Chappanna means 56. 56 different types of preparation he gets every day. Where does Krishna go when he wants to sleep? Sriranga. Yes. Why does he go to Srirangam to sleep? Huh? Yes, Ranganath is in the reclining position. He's kind of relaxing. He is Lord Vishnu reclining on Anantashesha. Which is what he's doing anyway, what Vishnu is doing right now, as we speak. What is the Lord doing? He's sleeping. Yeah, for 4 months of the year. Imagine, out of the whole year, 12 months, he's sleeping for 4 months. It's a pretty easy life. So this is not the time to do any rituals because you don't want to do anything that will disturb Lord Vishnu. So you may say, wait a minute, we're doing offering arti on the altar. No, that's all right. That doesn't count. But he's asleep. No, but he's also awake. But for 4 months he's asleep. This is called Chaturmasya. Where does Krishna go when he wants to do business? Tirupati, yes. Venkateshvara in Tirupati. Why does he go to Tirupati to do business? Huh? He gets donations. Is that business? Anyway, yes, he's receiving help to pay for a very big debt which he has to Kuvera, which he had to borrow from Kuvera. Why did he have to borrow from Kuvera? For his wedding, yes. In India, weddings are always very expensive, even if you're God. And where does Krishna go when he wants to get some exercise? Okay, Govardhan. In general, he goes to Vrindavan because there he can run with his friends, the cowherd boys, all day. He can dance with the gopis. And yes, he can lift Govardhan Hill. He's the original weightlifter. We worship the weightlifter god who doesn't have to go... No, he doesn't even make a face, and he only takes one little finger and he lifts and balances and smiles. So Krishna goes to Vrindavan. Vrindavan is his dhamma. We can say these other places are all also his dhamma. The broader meaning of dhamma is dwelling, place for living. And in some ways it's different from Tirtha. Tirtha is literally if I say this word, you'll get the wrong idea. In English, there's a word ford. Ford does not mean like the automobile. A ford is a place at a river where you can cross the river. Because the river is shallow. It's not deep, it's shallow. So in England, we have a place called Oxford, which is the place where they used to apparently take oxen across the Thames River. So it's Oxford. So that's a tirtha, but a tirtha is related to our word avatara. Avatara, tarana. Tarana means crossing, and ava means down. So the Lord crosses down. He descends to this world. And a tirtha is a place where you can cross over from this world to a higher world, or especially the spiritual world. So we could say that the Dhamma of the Lord is also tirtha in that respect. But tirthas, you can have many, many tirthas within one Dhamma. That's the case with Braja Dhamma. There are so many tirthas there. There's one place in South India, Rameshwaram, where within one temple there are 22 tirthas, all within one temple. Anyway, a Dhamma is a dwelling place, and in English we have the word home. And in Slovenian you have dom. So you have dom and you have house, kuća? Hisha. So, what's the difference between a hisha and a dom? Okay. It's the place where the heart of the family is, yeah. So this is the idea also of Dhamma. It is the place of the heart of the Lord. So now, to illustrate this a little bit, and this is just one illustration. There are so many. As we know, as most of us know, Krishna spent his childhood in Vrindavan. He had a wonderful time with all of his friends and his family. Every day was a new exciting experience. But after some time, some say 11 years and some say 16 years, he left Vrindavan. Why? He had to perform some duties, specifically had to help Kamsa to understand things as they are, to help him to take shelter of Daivi Prakriti. And so he left Vrindavan and he went to Mathura. In present day geography, there's not very much distance between Vrindavan and Mathura. But you get the sense from Srimad Bhagavatam that there was a greater distance between the two. In any case, now, let's assume that Krishna is 16 years old because it makes a little more sense in the context which we want to talk about, and that is when he comes into Mathura, he and his brother, Balaram, are like young teenagers. Teenagers are kind of like, you know, out for some fun. You know, going out, we say, to paint the town red, to, you know, have some excitement. So he and Balaram are there walking down the street in Mathura, sort of checking out the scene. And along comes this young lady, Kubja. Now Kubja, also known as Trivakra, had a problem. Or you could say she had two problems. One problem was that she had an incredibly intense attraction to Krishna. Well, as we know, she wasn't the only one attracted to Krishna. Well, what made this a problem in one sense was her appearance. She was born, apparently born this way, deformed. Her back was bent. We call it hunchback. But Trivakra, this means actually bent in three places, and Krishna is also bent in three places, but that's a little different. Tribhanga lalitam, Krishna's bending is very attractive. Kubja's being bent was not so attractive. But she was very attracted to Krishna, and she was not going to let her unattractive feature keep her from approaching Krishna. So she approached Krishna on the street, and she had some sandalwood paste. Sandalwood paste is a kind of cosmetic. One puts it on the skin, it makes the skin cool, and it's also good for the skin. So she offered sandalwood paste to Krishna, probably putting on the forehead, because that's one place you put sandalwood. And Krishna immediately reciprocated with this, what he recognized as an offering of love. However motivated it might have been, it was an offering. And so he, seeing Kubja's condition, he touched her on the chin like this, and he lifted. Yes, last week we were mentioning how Balaram made some adjustment to the size of Revati with his plow by hooking it over her shoulder. Well, in this case, it was the opposite. Krishna was lifting, straightening up Kubja. So, whoop, he just went like this, and instantly she straightened out. She became suddenly a very beautiful, shapely, attractive young lady. And she, seeing her new condition, being very happy about this, she wanted to then immediately invite Krishna to her home to enjoy with her, because she had apparently the, let's say, mentality of a prostitute, although it's explained else that in fact Krishna is the first man that she ever approaches. Shishi pancha tattva ki jai. Well, Krishna's a little embarrassed by this proposal because his friends are with him. Balaram is there, and also some of the other cowherds, and they're all sort of, you know, making jokes now because it's a very awkward situation. But Krishna says, well, not just now, but I have some business to take care of, and then we'll see what can be done. So indeed, Krishna proceeds, and as we know, eventually does his main task, which is to kill Kamsa. And then after killing Kamsa, by dragging him by the hair and smashing him, again, coming back, he, Krishna, with Balaram, are sort of, now they're really, you know, swaggering through the street. They're like, I mean, there's kind of nobody like us, you know. We're the hot shots of the town. Well, actually, though, Krishna was looking very sweet, very attractive, such that, again, Kubja came. But now she was no longer Kubja. Kubja means hunchback. But somehow she kept that name. And she said, so, how about now? Well, Krishna is again very embarrassed. He turned red. But he had committed himself. He had made something like a promise. And at the same time, he wanted to bless Kubja. He wanted to liberate her, to elevate her and to liberate her. And so he agrees to go with her to her home, which is beautifully decorated. And he's sitting down on the couch with Kubja. And in this way, they are associating. There's no more details given. The humorous part, I find, is it mentions that Balaram was waiting outside. Yes, Uddhava was also with him. Now, Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in his Jiva Dharma that there are different types or different qualities of conjugal love. There's what is called samanya. The samanya lover is the common lover. The common lover is selfish. The common lover wants for him or herself to be the receiver of love. Kubja was not a common lover. Why? Because she had some genuine desire to please Krishna, but she also had some desire to please herself. And so, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, she falls into the category of being a sadharana lover. A sadharana lover is an ordinary lover, one who has mixed motivation. We can say most people would fall into this category with respect to whoever their consort might be. Then there's another category called samanjasa, and this refers to the wives of Krishna. Krishna's wives fall into this category because their love for Krishna is what is called proper. It is proper love. Proper suggests a sense of duty because the marriage situation involves duty. It's, we can say, a very important element of the household, household relationship, householder relationship. So that is called proper. And then finally, there is the love of the gopis, which is called samartha. Samartha means complete. It is complete. Why? Because it is love which has only one interest, and that is to please the lover, in this case, the Lord. So now, here's Krishna with Kubja, and he's thinking, well, she's more than a samanya lover. She does have some desire to please me, so that's very nice. So, all right, she's a sadharana lover. And I want to oblige her. Why? Because this is Krishna. Krishna wants to reciprocate with all of his devotees. He wants to respond to everyone's love. That is Krishna. But where is he with Kubja? He's not in Vrindavan. He's in Mathura. And what is he thinking while he's there with Kubja? Is he thinking about Kubja? No. He's thinking about the gopis. She doesn't know that, but well, one thing that he's thinking about the gopis is, what are they going to say when they find out that I've been with Kubja? And sure enough, when he returns to Vrindavan, it seems that he eventually does return to Vrindavan, the gopis already know, everybody already knows that he's been with Kubja. And so some of them are already giving him trouble for that. Kubja's love is compared to that, is compared to a jewel. The queen's love is compared to a Chintamani gem. And the gopi's love is compared to the Kaustubha jewel, which Krishna wears. Krishna and Vishnu wear this. So it seems that Krishna was thinking while he was with Kubja, well, if I can't have a Kaustubha and I can't have a Chintamani, at least let me have a jewel. So Kubja was a jewel, and Krishna was appreciating this. Kubja, by the way, according to the Garga Samhita, and there are different versions, but according to Garga Samhita, why did she become qualified to meet Krishna in this way? Because in the previous life, she was Shurpanaka. Other sources say she was Mantara, but in any case, here is Shurpanaka. Who was Shurpanaka? Sister of Ramana, who was very attracted to Rama. So attracted to Rama that after she lost her nose and ears and reported to Rama what happened, she went and submerged herself in the water of some river or ocean, I forget, for 10,000 years and did austerity. That's austerity, by the way. submerging oneself in water. For 10,000 years. Until Lord Shiva came and she explained what she wanted. I want Ram. Shiva said, not possible. Rama is taking a vow. He's only accepting one wife in this life. But next time around, Krishna will have so many wives and so many girlfriends. So you have a chance. So that's the benediction that Shurpanaka received, and so she appears like this. Well, the point is that Krishna is longing for Vrindavan. Why? Because the devotees in Vrindavan are all in this mood of completely selfless love of Krishna. They're simply eager to please Krishna. So that's where Krishna appears. Now, it turns out that because wherever there's Krishna, there's the Dham. And don't forget, Krishna is present in every atom. So that means in every atom is also the Dham. That's a bit much for the brain to comprehend. Anyway, Krishna appears. When we say he appears, one way this is explained, there's the two technical terms, prakarta and aprakarta. So Krishna's generally aprakarta. He is unmanifest. But when he appears, he becomes prakarta. Prakarta means can mean manifest. It means also something like public. It means open. Krishna becomes visible, easily accessible, visible. So on Krishna Janmashtami, we celebrate Krishna's becoming prakarta, becoming visible. Prabhupada explained in one of his early lectures. He was in New York in the 26th Second Avenue storefront, and he was speaking to the few devotees there, and he was explaining about how Krishna appears like the sun rises, it sets. We don't think, therefore, that the sun no longer exists. It's simply becoming unmanifest to us. And then he gave example of a motor car. He would say motor car. Just like when a motor car drives by our storefront, because the 26th Second Avenue storefront is very narrow. It's about maybe 5 meters wide and sort of long. And then there's window to the street on one end. So, and it's a rather busy street, Second Avenue. So many cars going by. So Prabhupada was speaking from the back of the room, seeing the cars going by. And he was giving this as his example of how Krishna appears and disappears. So he said, just as the motor car is appearing before the window and then disappearing, we do not think, therefore, that the motor car no longer exists. Right? So similarly, we do not think that Krishna does not exist, although he is not present, visible to us. But how to make Krishna visible to us? How to make him present to us? It is to become Mahatma. And I want to finish with this point that I think this is a special feature of Srila Prabhupada's sense of mission, that of course, it goes back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the idea, in effect, that anyone and everyone can become a Mahatma, a great soul. But it seems to me that one of the many, many things that we can appreciate about Srila Prabhupada is how he really took this understanding to heart. He was really convinced of this, that anyone can become a great soul. Great soul meaning one who takes shelter of the spiritual nature. And that means, of course, ultimately taking shelter of Krishna's holy Dham, Krishna's Dhamma, Krishna's home. We're all looking for a home. We hanker for a sense of home. We're in in these modern or postmodern times, everybody is on the move. There's no sense of home. Here in Slovenia, in the villages, maybe people spend more time. Where I come from, the whole of America is pretty much on the move. If somebody lives in one place for 3 years, that's a very long time. Everyone's shifting. It's a shifting culture. And the result of that is a sense of hankering for home. But of course, that's what we're all, even if you stay in one place your whole life, what we really want is to be home. And where is that home? That is with Krishna. And that's what Krishna's inviting us to do, is to join him in that home of Sri Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
So, I think we stop there. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Shri Shri Pancha Tattva ki. Gaur Premanande. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.